Another show tonight that went into a 35-minute overrun. Less than 2 weeks out from All In. My God. We had a pair of trios matches on this show. One opened the show, one closed the show. Both of them had the Don Callis family. So if you're a fan of the Don Callis family, boy, I mean, if you're a fan of the Don Callis family, they're all over the show every week. But you got them at the beginning, you got them at the end. The big angle of the end, though. The matches don't even matter. The two trios matches we had tonight don't mean shit. The only important thing that happened here at the end, it came after the match. And it involved Kenny Omega and Will Ospreay, who had a face-to-face sit-down interview earlier in the show conducted by Renee that I actually thought was very good, although that was the high point of the show. Strongest interaction that these two have had in all the weeks coming out of Redemption in the build-up here to All In. The one thing that they really solidified here at the end of the show was heel Kenny Omega. So they were kind of teasing it the way that Omega's been acting of late, but they really made it very clear who the babyface is supposed to be here and who the heel is supposed to be going into Wembley Stadium. It ended with Kenny Omega taking a cheap shot at Will as he was being held by a couple of security guards and then dumping him through a table outside the ring with a one-winged angel. And then Kenny got the crazy eyes as he was sitting there, and that's how they closed the show. So I guess the idea, at least in part, is that the championship is, as it did many years ago, once again corrupting this man. This is a different kind of Kenny Omega that we're not used to seeing. He's the champion now. He thinks his shit don't stink. He's the guy. Will Ospreay, he's not shit. That's basically the gist of it here going into this show. And so it was important, I guess, to kind of drive that point home. But also the other thing they did here, because that trios match had Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks. It was the Elite taking on members of the Callis family. And so when the match was over, more members of the Callis family came out, and we had this big wild brawl. Adam Copeland came out, Christian Cage came out, and we saw an errant shot, an errant super kick to Christian. This was important because, honestly, of all the key matches that have been built up for this pay-per-view, which, again, is only about 10 or 11 days away now, this one seems to kind of be falling under the radar. And I feel like this match should feel like a much bigger deal than it is. First ever, you know, Edge and Christian against the Young Bucks. It's kind of been lost in all the noise, I think, of the Omega Ospreay stuff and Willow and Mercedes and the Continental Cup stuff. So it was important, I think, to get those guys out there, even if it was just a quick run in there at the end of the show. But that's how they went off the air. And we also, as I said, we had a pair of interviews. It wasn't just Kenny and Will who had their sit down. We had a split screen interview earlier in the show between Mercedes Moné, Willow Nightingale. They're having their Women's World Championship match at All In. I enjoyed that segment too. So again, that one wasn't really face to face per se. But those two segments I thought were very effective in terms of the two world title matches that are coming up on the pay-per-view. We also had a pair of quarterfinal matches in the Continental Cup, one of which surprised the fuck out of me when they first announced it in their little YouTube special on Monday night, because I was thinking this has got to be the final. This is tailor-made to be the final of the tournament here between Jon Moxley and Jay White. And then they announced it for tonight. And I was really hoping that we would get the first real upset of this tournament and that Jay White would pull it out against Moxley, something that nobody else has been able to do because Moxley has basically been untouchable this entire year. He would beat Moxley, which would make him, I guess, would make him the champion. I mean, effectively, is that title on the line? Every single match he has in this tournament, I guess it is. And Jon Moxley, they could always have him enter the gauntlet and he could win the contract, because we all know coming out of this pay-per-view, whether it's at All Out or sometime after that, we know what the direction is. The direction has got to be Ospreay and Moxley for the championship. You know, again, Ospreay still has to get that win back from earlier in the year. So I was hoping maybe they would go in that direction. They went the predictable route. Another Jon Moxley win. Surprise, surprise. Although they had a very good match. The other match was Nigel McGuinness, who suffered an injury, and we'll get into exactly what happened there, but he suffered an injury in his match on Collision. He had a match in the tournament here tonight against Hechicero, and Nigel is also moving on to the semifinal round. Also on the show, Kevin Knight, he blew up Darby Allin. He exploded him. good. How many people did we see Darby Allin blow up with various explosive devices? Give him a little taste of his own medicine tonight. So now I don't know if the false count anywhere match is going to be happening or not. Gee, I guess we'll have to wait until next week and find out. But indestructible Darby, I'm sure, will find a way to make it to Wembley. And we had a TBS Championship four-way match. Maya World putting her title on the line against Chris Statlander, Hikaru Shida, and Persephone. So those were the key points on the show tonight. There was a lot going on. They went way over time. I'm not going to. We're going to try to zip through this as economically as we can. This is your AEW Dynamite review. It is Wednesday night. It is August 19th, 2026. For those of you who are with me, I thank you. I know that Wednesdays is usually the softer night when it comes to Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, but we do the best we can with that. Like and subscribe. I'm going to bring the faithful wheel up here. Oh, by the way, I wanted to say thank you. I want to give a shout out to Noah, who may be with us in the chat. I believe Noah was at the not Noah the Mark. If you know, you know. But Noah was in the crowd tonight. He was at the show, and he was able to get a sound-off sign. He brought a sound-off sign with him, and he got it on camera in the closing moments of the show, actually, off in the background behind Kenny Omega there. So shout-out to Noah for representing the podcast, brother. I appreciate that very much. Spin this bad boy here so we can get into this. Shout-out to Sarah. What's going on, Sarah? Bonus goal only. Okay, well, that means no Be the Booker tonight. That's what that means. But you already knew that. Let's get into this here. First of two trios matches that we had, of course, the aforementioned Don Callis family. In this case, it was Brian Cage, Lance Archer, and Rocky Romero. The always successful Lance Archer and Rocky Romero taking on the United Empire. So it was Will Ospreay, Hanare, and Francesco Akira, who we never see on Dynamite. Maybe one time, I think, they had a match on Dynamite here this year. So I saw this match. I'm like, eh, very blah. Match broke down at the end. Ospreay, he spiked Cage with a poison Rana. Romero tried to slice bread. He ended up eating a double team cutter, though, from Ospreay and Akira. Akira and Hanare, they hit stereo dives outside the ring, and that left Rocky Romero all by his lonesome in the ring to eat a hidden blade. That gave the win to Team Ospreay. Decent opener. You know, we got some good action here, but the whole point was just to put a spotlight on the challenger at All In, with the champion getting his own trios match later on in the show. Renee was backstage with Kazuchika Okada, trying to get his thoughts on the international title three-way coming up at All In with himself, Kyle Fletcher, and Konosuke Takeshita. Okada said nothing is more important than family, unlike Takeshita, who left the family because he's selfish. That's right, he's a selfish prick. So he said that Fletcher won't make the same mistake that Takeshita did. He would be happy for Kyle to retain the international title because that would mean the title would remain in the family. But if Okada wins, he expects Kyle to be happy for him and to raise his hand in the middle of the ring. So after this, we cut to the arena live, and Tony Schiavone is in the ring to introduce the international champion, the proto-star, Kyle Fletcher, who made his way out to the ring all by himself. Shockingly, we did not have any other members of the Callis family. I guess they were getting ready for their second trios match later in the night. Schiavone asked him about the possibility of raising Okada's hand at All In, and Fletcher said, look, he was in the middle of the greatest international championship run of all time, and he sees no reason that it needs to end at All In. He owes Don Callis a lot. He trusts Don Callis, and this is his plan. And Fletcher was willing to follow that plan, but he told Okada he needs to know his role. And then he popped the people's elbow after this. He needs to know his role in this entire thing, which is to be his family and help him retain his championship. So then he turned to Takeshita, and he said that he hated his guts, and he mocked him for losing the G1 climax. Yeah, he got bounced. Takeshita won the G1 last year, but he got bounced. He didn't even make it to the finals this year. I know we're taking a little sidebar here, but I did see the finals of the G1. When I did the sound off on Sunday, I hadn't had a chance to watch the entire match yet. But with Oiwa and Uemura, those of you who follow New Japan and know who they are, They had a fucking awesome match in the finals. A match that ended, by the way, with a headlock. Which I know if you're just hearing that, like, that sounds completely preposterous, but they made it work. So good on them. That's one of the best matches I've seen all year. But yes, Takeshita, he failed in the G1. And that brought out Takeshita. This is the first time we've seen him here on the show since July, right? It's been many weeks. Back on American soil. He came to the ring. A brawl ensued between these two men. Fletcher hit a half and half. Takeshita came right back with a blue thunderbomb and then a poison Rana. And then as Fletcher was, it was like the Mortal Kombat thing where somebody is about to take a fatality, right? And they're like going like this, right? That was him basically on his knees. He was waiting for the fatality, and the fatality was the power drive knee. He took a raging fire, and then Okada never came out to help. Okada never showed his face here. He left Kyle out there to die. Excalibur at this point, at the end of this. And by the way, that is one of the matches I am very much looking forward to on that show. That match is going to be fucking awesome. The match that we had at Double or Nothing between Okada and Takeshita is one of my number one favorite matches of the year. Fletcher, he's had a lot of great matches himself this year, including one just a few weeks ago at Speedball. So you put all three of them in the ring together, that's going to be a lot of fun. Now, Excalibur, he was trying to run down. He was attempting to run down all of the remaining matches here that were on this show, but he sounded like a fucking cyborg. I'm going to do my best. Let me see if I could do my best.
Excalibur impression. Still to come tonight on Dynamite. Another fucking trios match. Fuck.
I don't know what was going on. I saw people who were watching on HBO Max like I was. People who were not watching. They were watching on TBS. I think it was just universal. I saw multiple complaints about the audio here. So he sounded like a cyborg. They went to commercial. When they came back, we were taken to an earlier sit-down interview at a table in a darkened room. Rene Paquette with the two men in the main event at Wembley Stadium, Kenny Omega and Will Ospreay. And at this point, we had no audio at all. And I said, oh boy, they better fix this shit because I was looking forward to this. Thankfully, before she was done speaking and before Ospreay started speaking, the audio was restored. Ospreay said he looked up to Omega. Omega said that he likes to keep his finger on the pulse, understanding who the flavors of the month are, the internet darlings. So he was also very excited, but not blown away by Ospreay the first time he saw him. He could see the potential. So a little backhanded compliment there from Omega. I should do the robo voice for the whole show. And I don't think people would like that very much. Yeah, I think that would get old after about, 8 seconds, maybe. Cyborg Solo. We may dust off Cyborg Solo every now and then. I'm not opposed to bringing him out.
Cyborg Solo. Well, that's not the voice I was looking for.
You see what I do when I give you guys exactly what you want? I fuck it all up.
That sounds positively awful, so let's not do that again. So Renee, she wants to know when Kenny saw Will in a different light, right? Because Will did not impress him at first. So when did he first start to impress Kenny Omega? Kenny says it goes back to Wrestle Kingdom 17. He came back to see if Ospreay could fill his shoes. Unfortunately, Ospreay was not able to prove to him that he could put New Japan on his back. He said New Japan needed to sell tickets, and Ospreay's name alone wasn't going to do that. His name does. So Ospreay says, with all due respect, Kenny walked into a very plush situation. Ospreay had it very different. Kenny built his name off the backs of people like Okada and Tanahashi and Ishii. Ospreay had to do it the hard way. Kenny made 3-hour trips. He had to make 15-hour flights. He was put up in a hotel no bigger than a broom closet. Omega was fine playing to the AEW marks around ringside while half the New Japan roster was starving during COVID. So don't give him that attendance bullshit. Omega said Ospreay makes it sound like his situation was so unique, but if New Japan actually had fans in the building, would they have been that loud for Ospreay? Renee mentions Ospreay joining the Don Callis family, and Omega said Callis promised him gold, success, AW gold, TNA gold, IWGP gold, until he finally saw what it was worth. It was a cautionary tale for guys like Ospreay, who didn't have to make the same mistakes that Omega did, but Ospreay couldn't help himself. Ospreay said that Omega embarrassed him. He came into New Japan, he was tearing apart his life in front of so many people that he loved, and he still has the scars on his head to show for it. Omega asked, how is this different from when Ospreay came into his home country? And Ospreay said Omega deserved it. Omega didn't use Don Callis in the Tokyo Dome, but Ospreay used Callis in their Forbidden Door match. And Ospreay acknowledges that, and he says that it still keeps him up at night. Everybody online was saying the same thing. Yeah, you won, but you didn't do it by yourself. You needed Don Callis to do it. So it still gnaws away at him. That win 3 years ago, to him, it meant nothing. Omega said that win was tainted. But hearing Will say that he couldn't do it alone, that's music to his ears. As far as Ospreay goes, Omega says the way he looks at it, he actually beat him twice. This isn't even a rubber match. He already has two wins over him. So then Renee brings up Kenny's diverticulitis, because we have to have at least one mention of the diverticulitis every single week. And I like the fact that even Omega himself here in this promo was talking about how fucking sick he is of hearing about this. He said he's tired of hearing Excalibur talk about it, and Taz talk about it, and Tony Schiavone talk about it. Let's talk about you, Will. You had 3 discs repaired in your neck, right? Omega says that he's in the best shape of his life right now, but he doesn't know about Will. Ospreay tells Omega that he's come back strong from his neck problems. Omega doesn't see it that way. Ospreay says no Englishman has ever won the world title in England. He's got a lot of pressure on his shoulders to do just that at All In. He doesn't need Callis. He doesn't need a screwdriver. He will do things the right way when he beats Kenny. And Omega said the last time Ospreay tried to do it the right way, he failed. And this time he'll fail again in his home country. The only difference is this time he'll have his mother there. And Ospreay stood up at this point. He was ready to just make a move towards Omega. That angered him. He told him, don't you mention my mother. Security off camera kind of stepped in. They were ready to pounce in case things broke down here. Omega said he's sure that Will's mom will be proud of him whether he wins or loses, but his young son might need a new hero after Kenny beats him again. And they had to hold back Will. Kenny walked off. I thought this was excellent. I thought this was easily the best interaction these two have had. They've had a couple of other ones prior to this. I thought Kenny was really good here. I thought Will was really good here. I think Ospreay, for the most part, has been really good in all of these. But this, again, this was the sign here early in the show that Omega was just acting like a dick. You know, he's sitting there. He's all full of himself. I mean, as he should be. He's Kenny fucking Omega. But like, he's sitting there enjoying the smell of his own farts, and he's just healing on Ospreay. Yeah, you know, you didn't really impress me at first, and then you beat me, but you really didn't because you needed help, and I don't think you can get the job done. So he was just acting very snarky and just all full of himself here. Ospreay, he just came off as desperate to prove that he can pull the trigger and he can get the job done by himself, because it eats him up inside. That match they had at Forbidden Door 3 years ago, that he did have help, and he does have people who say, well, you know, you beat him, but you didn't really beat him. And so I guess that's part of his mission here, is to kind of wipe that slate clean and go in there and show that he can do it all by himself. Pretty straightforward stuff, pretty simple to understand. And I thought this was very effective. I actually was sitting here watching this, and I was saying to myself, I would have closed the show with this. No, but then I said, well, let's wait and see what happens here. They have this other trios match. Right, they're bookending the shows with the two trios matches, so let's see what they have. They must have some big angle or something planned for the end of the show. That's why it was formatted this way, and sure enough, that ended up being the case. We had the TBS Championship 4-way match. Maya World putting her title on the line against Chris Statlander, Hikaru Shida, and the CMLL Women's World Champion, Persephone. This was not a good night. This was not a good night to be a world champion in CMLL. Male or female, they didn't even get 10 minutes for this. It kind of reminded me of the four-way that opened night two of SummerSlam only a few weeks ago. You have four of the best wrestlers in the world right now, today, in that match. Four. Couldn't even get 10 minutes. Now, I'm not going to say these are four of the best in the world right now, although I am a big fan of Statlanders, and I think Persephone is great. But to not even get 10 minutes for a four-way match is kind of shitty. So they crammed a lot in here. Maya and Statlander, they came to blows late in the match. Sheeta interrupted that with a missile dropkick. So then Persephone caught Statlander with a spear. That left Sheeta and Persephone, the two heels, to go at it. Persephone was looking for a razor's edge. Statlander, though, saved Sheeta, but only briefly, and then powerbombed her. Statlander blasted Persephone with a discus lariat into a high stack. Maya flew in from off camera with a swanton off the top. She tried her bridging fall-away slam finish. Statlander, though, countered out. She was looking for Wednesday Night Fever. She got rolled up by Maya for the flash pin to retain the TBS title. I thought this was good stuff here from these four. Maya keeps on rolling into Wembley as the champion. Good for her. No clue what they're going to do with her on that show. There was no overt hint. I mean, I guess if you are of the belief, as I am, that Chris Statlander, I don't want to say that she's going to go heel, but when this was over, she took the pin. And they had a close-up of her face. She was not happy. So that tells me that maybe she's going to pop up again at some point in this next week or so. And maybe we end up getting a singles match. Maybe we end up getting a one-on-one match at the pay-per-view with her and Maya. If you're going to do that, and I would love to see it, if you're going to do that, though, Statlander has to win. I don't want to see her just keep eating L's here on this show. She took the loss here in this match. If you're going to run back something with her and Maya, then she's got to win. You got to give her something. But that was the only potential hint of there being an opponent for her, you know, for the TBS title at All In. Otherwise, they didn't tease anything. They didn't hint at anything. I was thinking, okay, you set this four-way match up just to have her go in there and beat the other three. Somebody must be showing up when the match is over or debuting or something, and that might set a title match up. Nope, she just won. And she celebrated her victory. Instead, what they did was, few segments later, we'll skip ahead here. There was a segment in the back with Renee and Maya where she was interrupted by Willow Nightingale, who reminded Maya, you know, about a month ago, I promised you that if I beat Tekla at Redemption, holy fuck, I just realized, what is Tekla doing at All In? Where the hell is Tekla? I mean, I felt a little bad for her that she was this close to walking into Wembley as the champion and they took it away from her, which I was okay with because I think they made the right choice in going with Willow. But to not have something set up for her at all on that All-In show would be terrible. Because she's done some great work this year. And now we have one Dynamite left before we even get there. That's not enough time to set up anything major, but I mean, I hope she can at least get a fucking pre-show match or something. I completely forgot about her. Ever since she lost the title, it's like, out of sight, out of mind. I'm like, holy crap, I forgot all about Tekla. But she mentioned here that she did tell Maya that if she beat Tekla at Redemption and won the championship back, that she would give Maya the first shot. So she's a woman of her word. She wants to give her the shot this Saturday on Collision. And Maya was more than happy to accept that, and so that match will take place on Saturday. So maybe we'll find out then who the next challenger is going to be. Obviously, she's not beating Willow. But when that match is over, who knows? Maybe Statlander shows up. Maybe that's where Statlander shows up. She's not happy about the way things ended tonight. She wants another crack at it. I say give it to her. Can't think of anybody else really who would make sense in that spot here with practically no time left to build to a TBS title match. After this, we had our first of two quarterfinal round matches in the Continental Cup. The reigning champion, the unbeatable one, Jon Moxley. One-on-one with Switchblade Jay White, who just picked up a win. Actually, they both did. Last week, Moxley beat Jack Perry. Jay White picked up a win over David Finlay. So that led to this. When I saw that this was taking place tonight and not taking place in the finals, I was disappointed because I kind of knew, okay, I knew how this was probably going to go. I laid out this whole scenario about how, well, maybe, you know, he'll get the big upset win, and then you could always put Moxley in the gauntlet because you're not going to leave him off the pay-per-view. but like shake things up a little bit. This tournament hasn't really had any upsets so far. Maybe they would give it to us tonight. Actually, when I saw they weren't main eventing with this, that's when I knew. If this was in the main event, then I would have believed until the very end, until the bitter end, that Jay White might have had a shot. Once I saw that this was happening in the middle of the show, I lost much of that hope. They spilled outside after a break with Moxley diving out onto White on the floor. White was able to avoid Moxley diving off the top, and he landed back-to-back half Nelson suplexes. So they put Moxley on the top turnbuckle, hit a superplex, and when he did, he winced from the pain because Excalibur was telling the story on commentary about the injured neck. Right in the match with David Finlay last week, he was working over the bad neck, which goes all the way back to that fucking botched Dominator spot in the double chain match at Redemption. Moxley went for a sleeper hold. White reversed into a pin, though, for a close near fall. White hit a Blade Runner. Moxley, though, with presence of mind, rolls out to the floor. So White brought Moxley back inside. Mox, though, rolled him into a choke. White was able to get to his feet. Moxley hit a Death Rider, though. Great near fall. They got a great near fall out of that. Moxley went right back to the choke, though, and there was a brief struggle. It didn't go very long, and he went nighty-night, and the referee called for the stoppage. So we got the predictable finish, John Moxley. He rolls on into the semifinals here of this tournament. Thanks for coming, Jay White. I will say this. Since Jay White came back to the company, this was the best match that he has had. Whether it be TV, the Redemption match was fucking terrible. I hated that chain match. But even some of the matches he had on TV. The match with David Finlay last week was probably the best of the bunch. This was better than that. So it was nice to see him go in there, and there were some really dramatic near falls, and this was very good stuff. I can't hate on the match itself. I'll tell you what I'm really hoping this isn't, though. I really hope, you know, them bouncing Jay White out, Moxley's moving on. I really hope that the idea here is not to just set up Nigel to go to the finals and tell that story or even win. I don't want to see that. If that's the entire point of all this, to me, this is a waste. And I really, just because they're in London, or even worse, if he loses. But frankly, I don't think he should be the one. I mean, Moxley has been so protected and so unbeatable that after all these months, the whole year really, because he's had this championship since last year, for Nigel McGuinness to be the one, let's say if he goes to the final, he's not there yet, but if he gets there and he beats John Moxley, that would be ridiculous. That would be ridiculous. Now, there is the possibility they're setting up Mox and Eddie Kingston, right? Kingston is still in this. The same Eddie Kingston who up until recently had worked two Dynamites this entire year. The last time was in March. It's like, oh, you know what? Let's bring back Eddie Kingston. He's been toiling away in Ring of Honor. Yeah, I don't like the way things are set up right now. I'm not a fan of this. But after the match was over, we weren't done yet. JY got ambushed by David Finlay and Clark Connors. Orange Cassidy and Kyle O'Reilly, they came out to even the odds. But then Gabe Kidd showed up. This was his return. He went on the attack. Roderick Strong came out. He tried to make the save. Was it Roddy? Somebody threw a punch in here that was like a phantom punch. It reminded me of Shane McMahon. I think it was Roddy. He threw a punch that did not connect. So anyway, the Dogs were about to put down Roddy when here comes Hangman Adam Page and Brodito, the new Trios champions. And so the Dogs ran away. So now the demand comes out. It gets worse. Here comes Ricochet and the Gates of Agony. They come out on stage with the Lethal Twist. Hangman says there's no way in hell that we're missing Wembley. So if any of you out here or anyone who took a break from waxing their partner's head to watch from the stage, which got ball chants from the crowd here, directed at Ricochet. If any of you want a shot at the Trios titles, meet us under the Wembley Arch at dusk, because the champions will be waiting. And then later, in the back, Prince Nana was there with Swerve Strickland. And this was very brief. Swerve was just sitting down. He stood up, and he just wanted to make sure that he heard that anyone can challenge for the Trios titles at All In. Don't say it if you don't mean it. Yet another hint that Swerve is, in fact, going to round up a couple of partners to join him in combat. And I think that it looks like we're not going to get probably the announcement of who it's going to be. I mean, we have one more Dynamite left. I suppose it could happen next week. We're so late in the game here in the promotion for this show. If it's going to be the New Day, and I think we all suspect the same thing, it's going to be Kofi and Creed. That'll be more of an impact, or it'll make more of an impact than if it's just the Hurt Syndicate. At this point, there's no sense in even announcing it in advance. I think the way to go here is just to kind of let people speculate on their own, as long as you're going to deliver on what they're expecting. Don't let people's imaginations run wild with who it could be. Oh, it's going to be them. It's going to be this guy, that guy. And then deliver a fucking lame, you know, outcome. It's the whole CM Punk first dance thing in Chicago many years ago, where they never said CM Punk was returning, right? But you kind of knew CM Punk was returning, right? They said it without actually saying it. And I think at this point, if it's the New Day, that's the way you do it. And let them come out there and they'll get the big, you know, debut pop when they come out at Wembley Stadium. There'll never be a bigger moment for them than that moment when they first show up. So instead of trotting them out there in Glasgow next week, just save them for London. But it seems pretty clear who he's showing up with. The one thing I'm not really a fan of here, it looks like we're just going to have a whole bunch of different teams. At first, I thought it was going to be like three teams. Now I'm wondering if we're going to end up with like four teams, five teams. They're just going to like throw a whole bunch of people in there. And, you know, to debut the New Day in that way, that I'm not too fond of that. Otherwise, I mean, I don't really have an issue with linking them up with Swerve. Like initially, I think that's fine. But I don't want to see them toiling away in trios hell, though, for the first 6 months of their AEW run. We got other matches. We got tag team titles, not trios titles, for them to be challenging for. After this, we had Jonathan Cruz standing in the middle of the ring. If you don't know who that is, it's the former Serpentico. I will always fondly remember him as the man who wrestled Samoa Joe on Dynamite, and that great spot where he came diving off the top rope and Joe simply just stepped aside, and you got that great shot of him flying through the air just looking at Joe going, what? That was him. He has also in the past played the translator for MJF, like when MJF was doing the angle at Arena Mexico and everything. He's his personal translator. So he was in the ring, and he had a scroll. It was given to him by MJF to tell Andrade what he thinks of him, but do it in Spanish. He said, Andrade will never be the real world champion. Andrade is not a real Latino man. But then he said, well, he went off script here a little bit. Anyway, he said a few more things about Andrade that were not very nice. And so he went to go leave. And as he's going to leave, Andrade's music hits. He comes out. He is in no mood. He is storming down to the ring. He's not flirting with the women in the front row. He's not posing. He's not tranquilo. He makes a beeline for the ring, and as it turns out, we're getting an impromptu match. Justin Roberts went right into the ring introductions. This did not last very long. The spinning back elbow right away, and then the DM, and thanks for coming, Jonathan Cruz. Andrade took the microphone, and he called out MJF. And it was funny, because they kind of fucked up a little bit here. As he was talking, we could hear MJF's voice. And I thought maybe he was there, and he was like up in the skybox or something. What happened was they had a pre-tape with him, and they hit the button too soon. So you could hear it started playing. Andrade wasn't done with his promo yet, though, so he finished what he was saying, and then they cut to the video. And the video was MJF lounging in his pool in Plainview, Long Island, with his real-world belt, the Triple B, sitting there next to him, next to the pool. And he's pool or hot tub, whatever it was. I think it was his pool. He kept calling Andrade Andrew, which I thought was kind of funny. He said, you know, he was talking to the travel team, and he had asked his travel team, is Andrade going to be in Baltimore tonight? And when they told him that he would be, he said, okay, well, I'm going to stay back here in Long Island. The next time I see Andrew will be at All In. And that was pretty much it. There wasn't a whole lot to this here. It was just him acting like a dick. He wasn't there live. Andrade was fuming, and so he picked up Jonathan Cruz, and he gave him another DM, and then he asked him, How you know? And then he left. These are the two men that are entering the gauntlet number one and number two, respectively. You would watch this and never know there is a gauntlet match. You would think that they're wrestling one-on-one. Which is, I mean, this entire gauntlet is basically being built around these two. But yes, there's going to be a lot of other people in the gauntlet. We don't know how many. It could be five people. It could be 15 people, right? It's one fall to a finish. That's how these gauntlets work. But if you didn't know any better, you would think that this was one-on-one. Renee then had another interview here. This time, a little bit different. Willow Nightingale, the AEW Women's World Champion, and her challenger, the winner of the Owen Hart Tournament, Mercedes Moné, in separate rooms. So they were in the building, but they were in separate locations. So we had a split screen, and Mercedes called Willow a dumb bitch. Willow said that she had her number, and she said that she had the fans. Mercedes, you know, hates that. She hates the fans. Willow accused her of having everything she needs in wrestling except that connection with the fans. So Mercedes called Willow a bully. She had spent the last few years smiling. All she does is smile, right? Smiling and dancing. Meanwhile, when they wrestled each other in New Japan and Mercedes got hurt and her career was potentially over, she didn't know if she was going to wrestle again. Willow was there standing over her and she was smiling just like she's smiling now. So they started yelling at each other. She called her a dumb bitch again. I'm going to take your smile at Wembley. So they had enough of this. And they took off their mics. Willow went searching for Mercedes. And the camera followed her. She's marching through the back. Mercedes ambushed her from behind. And they brawled out into the arena. They brawled down to the ring. And we had a pull-apart brawl. And if you've seen one, you've seen them all. But the fans were into this. I like, for the most part, what they've done here with these two. They had that segment. God, where were they? Cincinnati? I like that venue. It was right after Willow won the belt. It was either that first Dynamite after or the week after. But it was that segment where when Willow came out, it had to be the first Dynamite after. And the fans gave her that standing ovation. They were just so happy to see her as the champion. And then Mercedes came out. She got a ton of heat. That was a great segment. I didn't enjoy this as much as that. But I think they've done a good job, you know, so far. As far as building the heat here between these two. And there's a lot of history between these two. And Mercedes has not been able to figure this woman out. Right? She lost her TBS championship to her. She has not been able to win the world championship. The two opportunities that she's had up to this point to become the world champion in this company, she has failed. And so if she wants to do it, if she wants to finally break the curse, she's going to have to beat the one person that she hasn't been able to figure out. Again, it's a very simple story to follow. I thought that this was fine, but as pull-apart brawls go, you know, again, if you've seen one, you've seen them all, right? They get separated. One breaks free. They get separated. The other breaks free. Everyone's got their formula for doing these. We had Nigel McGuinness and Hechicero. This was the other quarterfinal match here in the Continental Cup tournament. So what happened was Nigel was wrestling on Collision last weekend against Katsuyori Shibata. In the course of that match, he supposedly injured his ankle. I'm still not sure if this is meant to be a worked injury to build sympathy for Nigel or if he legitimately got hurt. I don't know. But he was sporting a walking boot the other day. He cut this babyface promo. This was on the quarterfinal selection special that they put on their YouTube channel. And there was some doubt about whether or not he was going to be able to continue. And he goes, nope, I'm going to remain in this tournament and I'm going to win the whole thing. I'm going to go to Wembley, right? Whatever. God save the queen. So he was wrestling Hechicero, the CMLL world champion here on this show, and he had his ankle taped up. Hechicero made that ankle a target. You would think that would be to his advantage. Unfortunately, the CMLL world champion was unable to beat this one-legged man / announcer. He lost to Nigel McGuinness here after Nigel locked on a guillotine and Hechicero passed out. And so that sends Nigel McGuinness here to the next round of this tournament, the semifinal round. I don't know if it had more to do with Nigel, the story being that Nigel was not 100%, and maybe he's legitimately not 100%. This was not very good. And I watched this match, and it certainly did not make me want to see Nigel go to the finals or win in the finals. And so I really am hoping that the whole point of all this is not to end Jon Moxley's run as the Continental Champion to Nigel McGuinness, of all people, just because they're going to be at Wembley Stadium. Because I think that would be a very lame way to end all of this, as unbeatable as this man has been. To be perfectly honest with you, if he wasn't going to lose to Jay White tonight, I don't think he should be losing until he wrestles Will Ospreay. I mean, I said that even before Redemption. This is before I knew they were doing this Continental Cup crap. I said Moxley shouldn't lose at all until he eventually gets in the ring with Ospreay. Ospreay should be the first guy to beat him this year. But then they announced this cup, and I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, you know what? Let's send Switchblade to the finals. Can we send Switchblade to the finals here? And then they just went and fucking beat him here. So, I don't know. They'll tell their story with Nigel. We'll see if he makes it to the finals. Right now, he's only in the semis. One thing I was surprised about, and if I'm wrong here and they did mention it, you guys let me know. I'll double check. But I did not hear the announcers mention the fact that Nigel is wrestling Lee Moriarty. I guess there's a Ring of Honor pay-per-view coming up this Friday. I think it might be Death Before Dishonor. With the stipulation that if Nigel loses, he will retire from Ring of Honor. Now, I know it's Ring of Honor, but that's kind of a big thing you would think they would want to push. I didn't hear them mention it a single time here on this show. You would think that would be kind of a big deal. I don't know. I didn't hear them mention it. We got a video package for Kevin Knight against Darby Allin. They're going to have a Falls Count Anywhere match at the pay-per-view for the TNT. I got my networks mixed up. TNT Championship. So Tony Schiavone is in the ring. He introduces Kevin Knight down to the ring, and Knight takes the mic away from him and says, you know, everybody questions the Jet. Tonight, though, I've got some answers, especially for you, Darby Allin. I'm not a young boy anymore. I'm a grown-ass man. I'm the greatest TNT champion of all time. And he demands that Darby come out to the ring. So Darby walks out onto the stage, and Knight wants security to check Darby to make sure that he doesn't have any weapons on him. Which, you know what? I would check him too. I don't trust this guy. So Darby opens his coat. He didn't have anything on him. So he tells Darby, come on down to the ring. And before Darby could even begin making his trek down to the ring, a bunch of pyro explosions go off. It's like what happened with Jeff Hardy in WWE many years ago. Who was responsible for that, by the way? I don't even remember who was responsible in that angle. Was it Matt or CM Punk, right? It was one of those two. But I remember when Jeff Hardy got blown up by pyro, Undertaker got burned by pyro. But this was like a whole bunch of pyroblasts that went off, and he was trapped in the middle of it. And so Darby goes down, and Knight, he drags Darby to the ring, sets him upside down in a tree of woe in the corner with a chair by his face, and he goes coast to coast, delivers a drop kick into the chair, into Darby's face. And so this was like a serious injury angle here. And AEW Medical came out, Sting's son, Sting Jr., Stephen Borden, he was out there. He's been training with Darby, living with Darby. So he came out there. They put a neck brace on Darby. They loaded him onto a stretcher. They took him to the back. After a break, we got a replay of the attack. It's such a small thing, but I will say I like that they did that. They don't always do that on this show. The pace of this show is so manic, and it is so just frenetic. They will shoot like a serious angle, and then they'll just go right into the next one, or they'll go to a break, they'll come back, and again, it's just on to the next. And they don't either let things breathe, or they don't draw, and I don't need 50 million replays, but like if you're going to do a serious injury angle and you come back from the break, you should show a replay of what just happened. It's a minor thing. I feel like we don't get that a lot here on this show. So just to drive the point home of like, holy shit, Darby Allin just got blown up here. They showed it again. Now we come back live. And Tony Schiavone on commentary says, Darby had visible burns on his face. And I'm like, I'm looking at the footage of him, and I'm like, I don't see any visible burns. But they're in the back now, and they're wheeling him on the gurney. And again, Sting Jr. is with him. Knight shows up. And Sting's son wanted to go after him, but Darby kind of reaches up and holds him back. And Knight is taunting him and saying, "You're not ready for it anyway. Stay in your lane." Meanwhile, you could hear the live crowd in the arena chanting, "We can't." I think they were chanting, "We can't see shit." So I guess they couldn't see what was going on here. And then if you could see through the smoke, maybe this is why they were chanting that. If you could see through the smoke in the arena, which was hard to do between that and then the pyro they gave Kenny Omega when he was coming out here for this main event, it was finally time for the main event. Yet another trios match with the fucking Callis family. This time against Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks. As Kenny's music hit, he was about to make his entrance. The camera's following him. They're right behind him in the back. Will Ospreay shows up, and the two of them kind of get into it verbally. Security comes over. Kenny's like, "Take him away." So Kenny makes his way out to the ring. They kept this to 10 minutes. Thank God. I didn't even think this needed to go that long to get to the point, which was everything that came after the match. The match itself didn't really serve much of a purpose other than to get us to what happened after. Omega closed it out with a V-trigger to One-Winged Angel on Jake Doyle for the win. That's really all you need to know. When the match was over, here comes Roppongi Vice, or RPG Vice. Is it RPG Vice now? Is that officially their name? I'm sorry. I'm sorry to all the Roppongi fans out there. They come out with Lance Archer. They hit the ring to attack the Elite, and they set up a table outside the ring in front of where the announcers are. Mark Davis, he drags Omega to the apron. Archer was about to double chokeslam the Bucks when we hear Adam Copeland's music. And Copeland comes out. He cleans house. Christian Cage is also coming out, but he's taking his sweet time coming down to the ring. The Bucks went to go super kick Trent Beretta. They ended up taking out Christian by accident. Copeland and the Bucks, they got into a shoving match, and then they ended up going after the Callis clan, and they fought them all the way to the back. So the only one left alone in the ring now is Kenny Omega. He was about to speak. Will Ospreay comes out. And Omega said, you know, he said that Omega said earlier that he had something to tell Will after his match. And Omega said, "All I have left to say to you is, security, get him out of here." And Ospreay called him a pussy. As Ospreay was leaving, Omega told him to tuck his tail between his legs like the little English bitch that he is. Not very babyface-like. Ospreay turned back around. He hit the ring. He got some shots off until two security guards pulled him back, which allowed Omega to take a cheap shot. He delivered a V-trigger knee to Will Ospreay here. Omega then took the mic, and he told Ospreay, "I got one last thing to teach you." Drags him over to the ropes, takes him to the apron, and he delivers a One-Winged Angel through that table I mentioned that they had set up outside. A One-Winged Angel through the table. And he had the crazy eyes. He's sitting there on the ground, like psyching himself up. Omega is. They pretty well established tonight on this show. The purpose of all of this was to make it very clear that Kenny Omega in this scenario, he's the bad guy. Will Ospreay is the one who is fighting from underneath. He's fighting the great Kenny Omega. The Kenny Omega who appears to be or in the process of being corrupted yet again by world champion and all the power and glory that comes with it. Right? You're not better than me. I'm the champion. I'm the great. What does he call it? He's got like 50 million nicknames, right? The best bout machine, the wrestling god, all this stuff that people call him. It's corrupting him. It's getting to his head. And Ospreay has something to prove to himself now. He has to go out there and he has to do it on his own. As Kenny Omega told him weeks ago, can you pull the trigger? Or it was John Moxley even that said that. His mission is to go to Wembley and prove all those people wrong. I don't need the Death Riders. I don't need Don Callis. I don't need you. I'm going to England. I'm in my home country. No Englishman has ever done this before. I got the weight of the world riding on my shoulders here. And I got a bad neck. I got a surgically repaired neck. And I'm going into the main event of this show in front of 45,000 people. And my only goal is to take that championship from you. That's it. And every promo he's cut so far, he's established what that means to him, right? How much pressure he's putting on himself because this right here, everything revolves around this match. Everything revolves around that championship. and him living up to the potential that Kenny Omega talked about in that promo, that sit down at the beginning of the show. Well, you know, it didn't really impress me, but I saw the potential in you. Well, now it's time for him to put up or shut up and realize that potential at all in. It's a very simple story. I like what they did with them tonight. And also, again, it's good to get the Cope and Christian stuff in there. Even that still felt like an afterthought, but they had to do something. I mean, that match, again, that match really should feel like a bigger deal than it does right now. So you had to do something with them on the show. So they did the accidental shot to Christian, but they haven't done much, honestly, since that sit down, that tape sit down they did a few weeks ago. They need to fix their time management with these shows. That's my other takeaway from this. Either fix your time management. We're not talking about a 5 minute overrun, 7 minute overrun, 35 fucking minutes. So either fix that or just make it a 2.5 hour show. But I mean, it's crazy to me how, you know, it's supposed to be a 2 hour show. They advertise it as a 2 hour show. And it's not even like, oh, we got this great main event going on and we don't know when it's going to end. And then it goes like 8 minutes. It's like, no, the show is formatted as 2.5 hours. Why is it not listed as 2.5 hours? Just make it official at this point. It's like Raw. Raw is supposed to be 2.5 hours on Netflix. So we know that going in. Sometimes it's less, which I appreciate. 35 minutes extra for a show here, which was not needed. Could always find something to cut. That was Dynamite. Next Wednesday, they're going to be in Glasgow, Scotland. That's the go-home Dynamite before All in London on the 30th. We have Collision this Saturday. I guess there'll be a Collision the following Saturday, and that's it. Then we go into All In. I'll have all my predictions for the pay-per-view on the podcast coming up this weekend. Check your super chats out here, and then we'll get you guys on out of here. Thank you for joining me and hanging out with me here on a Wednesday night. Again, I appreciate you guys. And I appreciate Noah for bringing the sound off sign here to Dynamite tonight. It was at the very end there, but I did see it there at the end of the show. Let's start here with Michael. Mike from Brooklyn. Well, actually, hold on. Jersey Authentic. Yes, I did see that bump. I actually saw it while I was in the middle of doing TNT with JD last night. Somebody sent me a link to that bump that smart Mark Sterling took at the Ring of Honor show. I don't know why Ring of Honor. I guess because of the pay-per-view this weekend. That's why. I was like, why is Ring of Honor airing on a Tuesday? I didn't realize there's a pay-per-view, I think, on Friday. But yeah, he was on the apron. I'm sure most of you saw it by now. But if you didn't, he was on the apron and Commander did that springboard drop kick like Jericho does in his matches. Or springboard kick, and he kicks Mark Sterling and he takes this bump off the apron in such a way where he land. It's not even enough for me to sit here and tell you that he landed on his neck. He landed on his neck, but his body contorted and twisted in a way that he looked like a cartoon character. The human body is not meant to twist like that, and your head and neck is not meant to just like a fucking javelin go into the ground. So his whole gimmick used to be he would walk around with a neck brace on. I hope he kept that neck brace because he's going to need it. I hope he's okay. That was very, very scary. Anyway, Mike says, I normally listen to the podcast, but I am getting back surgery this morning or in the morning. Thank you for what you do. Well, I am wishing you all the luck in the world on that. That's pretty serious stuff there. I don't know what the back surgery is for. I don't know if there was an accident or if you just have some back issues that you're trying to remedy, but I hope it all works out for you, Mike. I hope it all goes well. Thank you, brother. Dry Chicken says it's good that Kenny Omega is healing it up against Will Ospreay to the point where you just want to punch Omega in the face. He is coming off like someone that you would want to punch in the face. I think he's doing a good job with that. Walter Palacios with a $9.99. Hey, Walter, thank you, my friend. Happy Wednesday to you. Dry Chicken says Tekla should have an open challenge against a Stardom wrestler at Wembley. Yeah, I don't need that. The card's going to be big enough as it is. I don't need to see that on the show. You want to do it on the pre-show? Be my guest. We don't need that on the main card. Unless they were to use that as a way to debut somebody new like Kairi. If Kairi maybe is going to sign with Stardom, have like a dual contract thing going on with, you know, them and AEW, then I'll allow that. Love the Lord says fourth best Dynamite of 2026. Fourth best. What are the first three? Jay White should have won. Steve Borden is on AEW television in his debut. Do you think Callum Newman turns on Will Ospreay at Wembley? I hope not. Callum Newman has had absolutely nothing to do with any of this. I don't want Callum Newman to factor into the Wembley main event. I think that would be awful. So no, I have no interest in seeing that. And Dry Chicken says MJF will not interfere in the main event. He should ruin either Omega or Ospreay's post-match moment. I don't know that he's going to, because we still have to get the singles match. I think we're going to get a singles match with him and Andrade. And I feel like he's got to wrap that up first before we thrust him back into the world title picture. So we'll see what happens with him coming out of All In. Thank you, guys. I told you I was going to get you in and out as quickly as I could. That was Dynamite. I'm going to be live with you again on Friday night. We'll be talking about SmackDown. Big show. They're in Toronto. Kevin Owens in Canada, challenging for the WWE Championship against CM Punk. I know he's probably not going to win, but I wish he would. Sami Zayn, I'm sure, is going to fuck it all up. We'll find out together. And what else have they announced for SmackDown? I think they announced a bunch of other matches, too. I just don't remember. I don't remember what they were. Oh, Blake Monroe. That's right. Blake Monroe is making her debut against Julia. That's also coming up on Friday. Am I going to see the Coyote versus Acme movie? You bet your ass I will. I'm going to wait until the end of the weekend. Hopefully my local theater is showing it. And if they are, I'm going to snatch up tickets for later in the week next week. I saw that last trailer. It looks like a lot of fun. It very much reminds me of Who Framed Roger Rabbit, which was a very kind of revolutionary movie for its time. The whole mix of animated and live action. This reminds me of that, and I love that. So if it can be as fun as that movie, then this is going to be a thumbs up. I'm looking forward to it. And just think that this movie was not even supposed to see the light of day. David Zaslav was going, he's going to personally push the delete button on this movie. All for a tax break. Fuck him. Imagine working on a movie, however many months it took to make that movie. And yeah, you get paid for it. It's not like you work for free, but still, you put your heart and soul into something, and then, or maybe you're like a newer actor and, you know, this is going to be on your resume. You want people to see your acting work here in this film, and then it gets put on a fucking shelf, never to be seen. That's what almost happened with this movie. I hope a lot of people go out and buy a ticket and go support the movie, as I will be doing. Anyway, be well, stay safe, and come on back on Friday. We will do it all over again and hopefully do some Be the Booker for SmackDown on Friday night. Until then, take care, guys.